Support for Looking Up comes from Cincinnati Museum Center, presenting Destination Moon, the Apollo 11 mission. You can see more than 20 objects flown aboard the historic Apollo 11 mission, plus the command module Columbia, the only portion of the historic spacecraft to survive the lunar journey. Open now at Cincinnati Museum Center.
Hey, Anna, I heard this rumor that if you're up in space, the astronauts looking down on the Earth, that you could see a man-made object, and that is the Great Wall of China. Can you see that from outer space?
Dean, first of all, how many times do I have to answer your questions about space?
Lots.
This is insane. The answer is, of course, you cannot.
No, that's true.
This is embarrassing for you.
I know. I wanted to make you look good.
I know, and I do look so good right now because I'm telling you that it is definitely not true. I know it would be exciting, and I think astronauts, I mean, I know astronauts can take some pictures from the space station and things, but sadly, the Great Wall is not one of them.
No, not with the naked eye. It's like one of those urban legends that people think, yeah, well, certainly they could see that. That's like one of the biggest man-made objects.
But it's not tall.
No, it's not
tall. You know, like I could see, if someone's like, you can see the top of the Eiffel Tower, I'd be like, oh, maybe, I don't know. But people are like, you can see the Great, I mean, it's a lovely, amazing object, but it's not a tall wall, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Nope. Absolutely right.
I'm just saying.
And so, yeah, the things that can be seen from space that are man-made are giant, you know, big roads that have, like, a lot of contrast of colors from their background.
Yeah.
So they can see, like, the outlines of roads. They can see gigantic dams.
Oh, yeah.
And other big industrial complexes. But, yeah, Great Wall of China, you're absolutely right. You have debunked that myth.
I'm so glad I could help you out with this.
Oh, yeah. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman. We are both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean is the astronomer, and I like to pepper him with questions. In this episode, author Bob King joins us to help separate truth from fiction in outer space. His new book is Urban Legends from Space, The Biggest Myths About Space Demystified. Well, a big part of what we do on the show, well, really even in, well, for you and like every day, is to like set the record straight, just get people, gently guide people to the truth of what is going on, facts from space. That would be a good
book. That sounds like a good book.
Book title.
Yeah, that's a good book title.
Let me write that down real quick. Hold on. Anyway, and this our guest today has written a whole book just about figuring out what's real in space.
Yeah.
And what's
I know. And that's something that we deal with. We get the calls from the public about stuff like this, about, you know, UFO reports, about, you know, did we land on the moon, all this kind of stuff. But the one that's kind of growing is this, what I've kind of lumped into one category called cosmophobia.
What?
Fear of the cosmos destroying you, or death from above, as I like to even
So specifically, it would be like something falling on you from, or like an asteroid hitting.
Yes.
Like I have fears about spinning off into oblivion in space, like just head over feet.
You know what I mean?
Like,
that counts.
Okay. I have that.
That's in that category.
Put that on the list of things that I have.
It's not in the top 10, but it's up there.
You know what I mean? So being on Earth.
Right.
And the universe, like, attacking
you. Yes. Or something going wrong astronomically. Yeah. So
I worry about that, too.
You know, the Earth seems very stable now, but, something happen?
Right.
So this is it's a very common thing, and it's a term that was coined by a NASA astronomer, David Morrison, who would get all these questions, and he just got so many of them. He was like, God, people are really scared. Like, they're really scared of these things happening.
It's the unknown.
There is the unknown. There's also a lot of irrationality to it, but there's also a lot of mixed, you know, there's some media reports that get people kind of thinking about this. So, of course, one of the main ones is that a killer asteroid is coming to Earth.
Okay, but we talked about this, and I said that I just saw a thing. It is wrong, because they'll be like, you know what just missed us by like 6 inches? The most giant asteroid you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And you're like, well, A, why are you even telling me about it? and B, it's after what?
I know.
It is the meet the medium.
I love those stories because number one, they always tell you afterwards.
Yeah.
And number two, they don't really have a good grasp on distances. They're like,
really?
Yeah, because when you ask an astronomer like, oh, how did it miss us by a lot? They're like, oh yeah, it was really close. It only missed us by like 3.2 million miles. And so the reporters are like, missed us barely. they're not like missed us by 3.2 miles.
So 3.2 million miles.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So I remember one of the reporters asked me. I said, "Well, so is that close or not close?" I was like, "Well, okay. So when I went drove into work today, I missed falling into the Grand Canyon by 3,000 miles. That's the equivalent. Like that's how close it was.
I was snarky, Dino. You're like, come on, dude.
I know. So these aren't like real close ones.
Yeah.
And so the media kind of hypes these up. They're like, close. Oh man, it's close. So if it comes between us and the moon, then we're talking. Then I get my attention. So
really,
So that's 240,000 miles.
Has that happened in a time recently? Should I know about it? Tell me.
We have had that happen a few times. Oh my God, recent decade or so, but all of them were kind of known quantities. We kind of knew what was going on with them. But it's those little, there's like a medium-sized asteroid we got to watch out for. The big ones, we know where they are.
Oh God, I'm sweating.
The Earth-destroying ones, we know where those are. They're not going to hit us. It's the 100-meter range. Those are the size ones that we're a little worried about. But
are we?
Yes.
A little worried?
Yes. But the good news is, so for all the things you have to worry about in the world, all the reasons for people dying in the world of diseases, car crashes, accidents like that, in the history.
Anxious.
In the history of humanity, there is in the last 100, 200, 300, 400 years, only one known person has been struck from above by space rock.
What about that cow in Argentina?
I said only one person has been struck by a space
rock.
You're
like, don't conflate these. barnyard animals don't count. Okay, what happened to this person?
This person was...
It's not funny. I'm sorry.
Was sleeping. She was taking a nap on the couch. The meteorite came through her roof, came through her ceiling,
bounced
off her radio, and hit her in the side. And so this gigantic... It was the thing
How
about size
it?
Of a baseball or so, a little bit bigger than the baseball, and like left this giant bruise. So there's this great picture of her. Her name's Ann Hodges. So the only person hit by a meteorite, and she lived.
Oh, she's alive. Oh, here I was
feeling
bad.
Well, not anymore. It was in the 50s.
No, I know. Okay, fine. But I thought it killed her, and then we were making a joke about barnyard animals, but you're saying that she was injured.
She was injured, but not killed. And so that's in the history of humanity, one known human has been
hit. Did she keep it?
She, there's like a good story about it, actually.
Yeah. So we got time.
She was, so she was renting the place, and the landlord said, mine.
What?
He claimed it as his own property because it fell on his property. So
she was like, here, let me shoot it out of a cannon right into your ribs and you can have it.
So there was a public outcry said, no, you can't, landlord, you can't take this. It's her. It hit her. It's hers. And so he gave it up in exchange for some little bit of money. And she tried to sell it and wasn't able to. And so she ended up donating to the Smithsonian. And so I think Smithsonian has it. But her fame from being the only person struck kind of affected the rest of her life. And
really?
So, it was one of those things where she became very famous. But
what?
But I want to go back to
this is amazing.
Remember, there's nobody.
Okay, fine. Sorry. No one's
killed. Now, of course, you do bring up the one cow incident. And so, yes, there was a cow that was killed by a fallen meteorite.
That cow had feelings in
Venezuela. So it hit him. They saw the meteor shower at night.
Yeah.
They went outside in the morning. They heard these booms and all these things like that, and then sonic booms, and then they went outside and they found the cow with three rocks next to it. And so it's the one of the fatalities of it's a very famous meteorite called Valera. And we even have a piece of Valera at the observatory.
Do we really?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
I've only worked there 5 years.
Yeah. We get the piece of the cow killing meteorite.
Why do they call it the cow killer?
Yeah, because that's why I killed the cow.
Yeah, man.
So just for a little extra fun, it's got a little iron in it. So it's like, it started to rust a little bit.
Yeah.
And so we're like, hey, that's it's blood on the rock. And the kids believe it. It's great. I love doing it.
You do the kids?
I always say I'm just kidding.
I wonder where cosmophobia comes from. They're like, oh, great. Poor, you know.
Poor cow.
Right. Everybody loves cows.
The good news is the villagers made use of the cow, and they did actually eat the cow afterwards. So they thought nothing of that.
It's fine.
Yeah. But other than that, there's nobody. Yeah, nobody killed by a meteorite from up above. So let's wipe that away from yet. Oh, my gosh. How ominous.
I know. I'm so...
Man, I can't wait to talk to Bob King here. He'll set us all straight.
That's a good call. I need it. Yeah.
Well, one of the goals of Looking Up is to clear up misconceptions about outer space, like the whole Mars and retrograde stuff and things falling on people. So today's guest, Bob King, is a photojournalist by trade, but an astronomer by passion. He's the Bob behind Astro Bob and his blog, and, well, he's got his latest book, Urban Legends from Space, The Biggest Myths About Space Demystified. It just came out, and so Bob is joining us here. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So, your latest book is Urban Legends from Space. I mean, this sounds like, this has got some good stuff in it. Why write this book? What kind of motivated you to do this?
Well, I think misunderstandings about some basic ideas. That's what motivated me. I've spent a lot of years teaching astronomy in community ed classes. And so I get a lot of questions from people, and I have come to kind of understand certain things that either don't make sense or that are kind of that mystify people. And I think it really originated in that. And the book is just an attempt to shed a little light on some of those questions.
Nice. So maybe this is, you don't have to answer this, but we were wondering, are there any urban legends that you like debunked that you yourself believed for a long time, maybe? Just saying.
Oh, well, I'm sure. Let's see. That is a wonderful question.
Thank you. So, I thought of it myself.
Yes, that's great. I think maybe when I was a kid, I thought that astronauts were weightless because there was no gravity in space.
Oh, yeah.
When they were orbiting around the Earth. And, of course, I came to learn that, wow, if there was no gravity in the space station, if nothing was holding it to the Earth, it would just fly away. It would leave.
Yeah.
So there is absolutely gravity that is tugging on that station. That's the reason it orbits around the planet. And that the reason why they're weightless has everything to do with them falling. And the falling part is fascinating because they are falling around the curvature of the Earth at over 17,000 miles per hour.
Oh, my gosh.
Which, if you could get yourself in an elevator and have that elevator fall, you don't want this to happen, of course.
Right.
But if somebody cut the cord and it fell at 17,000 some miles an hour, you would rise up from the floor and float, just like an astronaut. You would feel weightless.
That would be amazing. And, I don't know, I'm not going to try it, but that sounds amazing, in theory.
You've had that experience, right, in an elevator when it dropped?
Yeah.
Have you ever felt a little lighter in your feet?
Just a bit, yeah, for like that second. Yeah, it's wow, I would just float right up.
Yeah, you float right up. That's kind of a hint of that. And so, yeah, it's just fascinating that that is really is what's happening. And it also, another thing that arises from that, which is fascinating, is that they're traveling that fast, but they never hit the Earth, right?
Right.
They go around the curvature of the Earth, around to the other side, and then come back. Now, and this goes to another myth that I address in the book about the flat Earth.
Oh,
if the Earth were flat, just think what would happen. Bam! They crash right into it. So just the fact that you can orbit the Earth and they can be weightless is another proof that the Earth is indeed a sphere, or close to a sphere, and not flat.
One of the fun ones that I saw and that I still get a lot at the observatory is about the full moon and its after effects, usually negative. Well, I guess there's some positive, but there's that myth out there that full moons, there are more crimes committed during full moons and more births during full moons and more people taken to insane asylums on full moons. What did you find out about that?
Well, in the book, well, I went and looked at the surveys, and there are a couple of major surveys done by reputable sources that have proven that actually there is no connection. It's completely random whether the moon is full or half or whatever. And then indeed, these things aren't affected. Matter of fact, there's no increase in crime, nothing out of the usual. There's no increase in births either. But I've experienced it just the way you did at the observatory. I used to work at a newspaper. I worked as a photojournalist there. And I still can remember people saying at night, you know, you'd hear come over the scanner that so-and-so shot somebody or knifed somebody. And I know I've heard it more than once where one of the reporters would say, must be a full moon.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know?
And I think what happens is that when that's repeated, it starts to become believable, even though there's no evidence for it. So sometimes, just to be funny, I would say, have you checked the moon's phase? Sure enough, if someone actually checked the moon's phase, by gosh, it was probably a waxing crescent or something like that. So some of the things, yeah, we just repeat, and so they actually do become myths, but there is no proof until somebody does a serious survey and looks at the data. And I do bring up those surveys in the book, and people can check them out online.
And also, wouldn't it be better if you're going to, like, go on some kind of crime spree to do it during, like, a new moon or when it's, like, super dark and you're under the cloak of, like, you know, I mean, I never understood that full moon is more, not that I'm some criminal mastermind
trying to. You've got a great criminal mentality. That makes sense.
Saying.
It's going to be darker, so
let's
of course.
Let's plan a crime.
That's right.
Now. I'll tell you what, I've got the calendar here, and the next new moon is October 28th.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to go out committing crimes. I don't know. I'm just saying, if I was turning my head into that mind space, that's what I would think. But anyway, I'm not a criminal. That's fine. I'm legit.
Oh, I know. Well, you would want to do it on a dark night.
Exactly. I'm just saying.
No moon at all.
Right. Yeah. The urban legend doesn't make sense to me. But it's fine.
Well, we busted that one with our criminal mastermind here. But the one of the ones that's a little more confusing for folks, and they hear a lot about it. I think it's on, you know, Discovery Channel. It's on History Channel. It's about the pole flip, that our magnetic poles are going to flip.
Oh.
An imminent pole flip that will wreak havoc on the Earth. And so how did you describe it in your book?
You know, the drifting of the magnetic poles, which is ongoing. And there is really no predicting. It looks like it's accelerating right now, where the pole might shift, where the present north magnetic pole is, that would become the south magnetic pole, so up in the Arctic. And then down in the Antarctic, that would become the north magnetic pole. And I think people equate that with somehow the Earth flipping over, some people do.
Mm-hmm, yep.
But it's just a creeping of something that's happening internally within the Earth, within its semi-molten outer core, that causes this slippage of the poles. And when it accelerates, it can appear that it might be happening soon. But sometimes, and scientists have mapped these, sometimes it suddenly slows down again and nothing happens. Or it could accelerate and the poles could switch. We know that the poles have flipped, the magnetic poles again, not the physical Earth, that the poles have flipped many times in the past. And yet, somehow, life has made it through all of those magnetic reversals. And we're still here. So while there might be some effects, you know, if those poles slip, because the problem is the interim, between when they slip and when they are set back in place, we could be exposed to a little more radiation from space that our magnetic field protects us from. So with a weakened magnetic field, when the flip is happening, there might be more radiation from space. You know, so that's kind of what the issue is. However, life has made it through many pole reversals. So we know it can't be so dangerous. And also, it's not just the magnetic field that protects us from space radiation. It's the atmosphere itself. It does a really, really good job of holding back particles, say, from the sun that might try to reach the ground. So it's something that's going to happen. It's inevitable. But no one actually knows when the next reversal is going to happen. It's just out there, maybe in our lifetime, maybe not for 1,500 years.
Well, we're big fans. This is a fun book to read. It, if nothing else, reassures us that of all the fears of out there of space trying to destroy us, some of them are a little far-fetched and some we don't have to worry about. And it's we're glad to have you out there fighting the good fight to debunk all this stuff.
The thing is, you know, we're human. We are built to face danger. And so it is no surprise that we would imagine something as being more dangerous than it perhaps is. You know, for instance, that these lights we might see in the sky that we call UFOs, they might be an alien civilization here to take over the planet. And I think that's just because of how we've grown up biologically to defend ourselves, to expect the worst. And that works in all of us. You just have to kind of keep a little bit of a skeptical mind. Keep it open, but stop for a moment and consider the evidence. And if there's still time to talk about it, being a good observer helps that too. And I address that in the book, paying attention to nature so that you can learn your environment. So when someone brings up some crazy explanation, you can say, well, wait a minute. No, I know what that is up there. That's not a UFO or whatever. That's a sun dog, or that's a weather balloon. So being a good observer helps to keep our minds clear. Plus, you have the pleasure of just enjoying all of the wonders in nature, too.
Well, we get these questions about weekly, and so I will be referring to your book when all of these arrive. These are like all the common ones, but this has been a lot of fun talking with you today, Bob, and good luck with the book, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun. I appreciate it.
We've been talking with Bob King, author of Urban Legends from Space, The Biggest Myths About Space Demystified.
All right. Well, it only seems right having Bob on our show that we do a little fact or fiction debunking.
Yeah, definitely.
Some things or something. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'd like to ask you if you're ready. What if you said no? Too bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the question is there a second sun Death Star named Nemesis that you can only see occasionally and it can or could cause mass extinctions? Go.
That is one of the biggest, newest urban legends.
Ooh.
Well, I'd say newest as in the 21st century emerged.
That's fair.
That in our solar system, we have our sun that we know and love, that we see every day. And we also have
it.
A second sun, a hidden sun that is very, very far away from us in the depths of space that comes around and comes near the Earth every so often, every couple thousand years.
Okay.
That we can't see because it's so far away, but when it comes close, then it wreaks havoc and destruction. And so the people that have made up this story, and it is a story because it's made up, is they've named it Nemesis, which sounds even more menacing.
It sounds...
Doesn't it sound...
Very,
oh,
yes.
Yeah.
So like sinister.
It is our Nemesis that has caused all these mass extinctions in the past. Now, so the basis of this is there's the factual basis of this is that the majority of the stars you see at night are not single stars like our sun. So our solar system, we have one star and that's our sun.
Right.
But we look at, you know, somewhere between 65 and 85% of all the stars you see at night are double stars or triple stars or more. These are suns that are going around each other in multiple weird systems. So the conspiracy theorists say, well, why couldn't we have a second sun that we just can't see?
The sun's evil twin.
Exactly. The sun's evil twin.
Yeah.
And so then when we say, well, we haven't seen it, they have an answer.
Oh, what's the answer?
This second sun is all black and gives off no light. And then I'm
what?
Like, right. That's not even a sun.
That's
then,
not a sun. You
no,
know.
That's a black hole. So
they're really pushing.
They really are. So yeah, this has been extensively researched, and we are always looking for stuff in the solar system to find, because if you were to find the second sun,
right,
you would be pretty famous. You would get to name it whatever you want. Some better name than Nemesis.
That's a stupid name. That's ridiculous.
So they would come up with something better than that. And so people have been looking for this for hundreds of years, and nobody's found anything.
I wonder why they haven't found it.
Yes, and that's what the conspiracy theorists say, because they think there have been pictures taken of it. some of their pictures that they claim are Nemesis are like the grainiest, fuzziest, blurriest things I've ever
seen. It's a bird.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, like, it's so far off.
It's like if I'm trying to take a picture of a tree out a car window, that's what it looks like. I mean, it's like it's terrible.
It's not it, right?
No. And so like they get these pictures of, oh yeah, somebody took a picture of the sun, and then there's this little dot in the picture that's like a little flash of light. And first of all, I'm like, well, wait, you said that Nemesis was black. So there you are.
Right.
You messed that up. But okay, so let's say this extra dot.
You're like, but I'll play along.
Yes, I'll play along. But this is what happens whenever you take a picture of the sky. Like, you'll get these after effects. You'll get these like camera blur, these extra little lights that artifacts.
Just, right.
So that's what we tell people, is that if you want to test this out, take your phone, take a picture of the sunny sky, take a picture of the night sky. You're going to get stuff on the camera that's not really there. You're going to get these false images that come through the camera. And so please don't send us any more. I can't take any more of these blurry After Effect images. It's not Nemesis. It's your faulty camera. Please.
You heard it here first.
So if nothing else, we've hopefully tried to solve that, but
well, you know, all we can do is try.
That's all we can do is
like
try.
So
this one, definite fiction.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks so much to author Bob King for joining us. You can find a link to his new book, Urban Legends from Space, on our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
And thank you for listening. We'd love to get your ideas for guests or topics or any questions you or your kids may have about space, astronomy, and science. You can drop us a note on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at lookingup@wvxu.org.
The archives of all past episodes of Looking Up is easy to find. Check out interviews with Beekman from Beekman's World, Amber Strawn from the Webb Telescope, former NASA head Charlie Bolden, and many more at wvxu.org/lookingup.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts. And please give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. It really helps, and we really appreciate it.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.